4animals.org. Give deer a break. Drive safe.
Did you know that back in 1964, before we became a disposable society, 87% of the soda and beer sold in the United States was packaged in reusable, refillable bottles? By 1994, this number had dwindled to only 6%. And studies show that reusing glass containers saves 90% of the energy required to make new ones. Recycling glass is good, but reusing glass bottles is even better. So remember, using it once is not enough. Choose to reuse.
And you're choosing to listen to WUSB Stony Brook, hopefully. It's 6:04. Sorry about the late start, but we'll be here extra long tonight. It's another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Wait, why aren't you there? I don't hear you. You should be there. What, you not plug in your microphone? This time it wasn't me.
Sorry for the
What, you unplugged your microphone?
I didn't unplug it. It was unplugged when I walked.
What's going on with the sabotage in the studio? Boy.
Hold on. Let me just adjust it.
People screw up democracy now. They unplug microphones. There was like, there's a bucket above the door when we walked in. We caught that one, fortunately, before we got soaked again. But really, I mean, we're all on the same team here. Let's try and act like it.
How's it now?
I hear you.
Check.
I hear you.
Check one. Check two.
Yeah. No, you're
there.
Are you
sure?
You're there.
Do I sound especially nasally?
No, more so than usual.
Okay. I think it's working.
A bit more annoying today, if that's what you're after.
All right. Okay. Oh, wow. Oh,
no,
yeah.
You asked, and sure.
Okay.
Which is great, because we're on for another half hour. Apparently, Finn is, I don't know how to explain.
He's running scared.
No, he's not running at all, actually. What do they call that? It's not power sailing. It's when you're up in the air. You know, you jump off a cliff and you float. What's that? What's that called?
Hang gliding?
Hang gliding. That's it. I couldn't think of the word. Yeah, he's stuck in a current, apparently, off the coast of Northport. And he's just waiting to get the right one so he can come down onto the beach. And as soon as he does that, he'll be right over.
I see.
But apparently there's something, I don't think it's Dorian related, but it's something involving up currents that is keeping. So if you go to the Northport, whatever beach that is over there, you can see Finn up in the sky. Having a great time. He's not in danger or anything like that. But when he gets down to ground, that's when he'll get back in the old Datsun and drive over.
Make sure to wave. Absolutely.
Well, don't distract him because he's very focused. And the slightest bit of, interference can lead, he'll be in Connecticut then. we're here on the ground. And
I was just over in the conference room, actually. You realize there's like a rolling chair thing where basically the chairs are pushing people out of the conference room?
We collect chairs here for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, and the thing is, there's music in there because people are processing it for the CD library.
Musical chairs. Now I get it.
No, we need to play musical chairs.
Wow, very clever.
Anyway, I rearranged some of them
okay. So
that there is ample space.
So we're collecting vinyl, we're collecting CDs, and we're collecting chairs, all of which have musical themes.
And I don't understand how we can't find the non-squeaky. Actually, this one's pretty good. All right. So the station's working
for the most part.
Yeah, all the chairs are being sorted between squeaky and non-squeaky.
Mm-hmm.
And various staid institutions are disintegrating before our very eyes.
How do you spell staid? Is it STAYED or STAID?
I don't know either. That's the thing with pronunciation.
Alexa's not here to help.
Yeah, you don't have to spell.
I'm not going to go to a keyboard and ask. I honestly don't know. And you know what? I'm not going to find out because who's going to tell me? There's no way I can get an answer to that question because I'm not relying on any crutches. My ignorance remains.
Yeah, and it really fits the theme. And that's just a fraction of the exciting news that mm-hmm. we're going to bring to you this evening.
Well, there is a lot of news. A lot of things are going on. We are on for an extra half hour tonight, so we'll be taking phone calls a little bit later on. Hopefully there'll be people out there to call. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe if they're up for a challenge and perhaps wanting to refresh their memory on using telephones.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our system here at the radio station is still interoperable with that.
Yes, it is.
That system with that network.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's
very exciting.
Give you the phone number just so you have it for future reference. When we say we're taking phone calls, that's when you can call it. But you can write it down now. it's area code 631-632-9872. That's area code 631-632-WUSB. country code one if you're out of the country. And you might be out of the country, too, because there's a lot going on outside of the country. We were watching the news on the way – well, we weren't watching it on the way over. We were listening on the way over. But Brexit. Oh, my God. Brexit. It's just never – it's like one of those diseases that you can never quite shake. It just keeps lingering and never quite doing you in. But
like jock itch or something?
Well, I don't know if that's what you want to compare it to, but it's something annoying.
Athlete's foot?
That's kind of the same thing, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah, athlete's foot is just jock itch on your feet.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's the same thing.
Anyway, go on.
There's two different sprays for it, and I think they're made by the same people, and the only difference is it's a different color.
Yeah, it's the same ingredient, but I'm just trying to set a mood. You know, I'm trying to illustrate and help paint a picture here of exactly.
Well, it's the time of year where people get these rashes, and it's very unpleasant. And the thing that you have to do,
especially after Labor Day week,
exactly. Yeah, you get all sweaty and it's. Wait a minute. No, I took the wrong fork on that. No, backing up. Brexit is what we were talking about. Not okay. yes, Brexit. Just moments ago, British Parliament voted to defy Boris Johnson and not allow him to simply proceed with a no-deal Brexit, which is obviously what he wants to do. You know, by the end of October, they want to just crash out of the EU with no deal, causing all kinds of mayhem and chaos. I can't imagine why. He's presented nothing to Parliament. He's not sharing any information whatsoever.
Yeah, he said he could easily come up with a plan in 30 days after they crash out.
This is like Trump saying he has a better health care plan.
Yeah, where is it?
It's 2019 now. He's been saying that since 2016. Nothing.
Still except, trying to destroy Obamacare.
Yes, you know? and succeeding in many ways, which is insane and criminal. But
at a time when people need health care more than ever.
Absolutely, with all the jock itch going around. Mm-hmm. But Brexit, you know, it's something that is going to dramatically affect the UK, no matter what side of the issue you're on. There's no doubt about that. It seems like you would want a deal that isn't going to cause a tremendous amount of mayhem and turmoil.
If anything, you'd want the path of least resistance, like the most quiet, subdued, pay no mind of exit. But this this is,
So yesterday,
Thelma and Louise.
Yesterday, Boris Johnson said he's not going to hold an election. Today, of course, he turned around on that and said, I am going to hold an election because I didn't get my way. What that means is I think they have the date, October 14th. He's going to hold a snap election against Jeremy Corbyn.
And he just had the Queen help him approve closing Parliament. And mm-hmm. that was then headed off with this action.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about that, did we?
It's this ebbing and flowing. Yeah, I didn't want to go too far back.
Talk about that on the other show.
Things are changing so much. Yeah. The timeline, let us not forget, he was looking like he had this almighty, you know, you know, the Queen's approval for the shutdown.
She'll do whatever you ask essentially, her to do. Now, if you get an audience with her, she'll do whatever you say. That's
right,
how it works.
Right. And it was his flex of similar to the U.S. government shutdown, something we've covered here and talked about and was employed as a tactic for yet another leader to try to get their way. But this required the approval of the monarch herself,
right,
which she gave, of course. And, you know, there wasn't an expectation that she wouldn't, that she would somehow stymie his efforts, especially given he's just become a leader, right, as the new prime minister there. So the first thing out the gate, no, she's not going to interrupt that. But in one fell swoop, in less than a week, he's back on his heels with this basically one person move, so he doesn't have the majority. I didn't realize the House of Commons was so tight as far as control versus, you know, Labour versus the Conservatives and so on.
It's pretty close. And by the way, we didn't actually say what we're talking about. He basically suspended Parliament for a five-week period.
I called it a shutdown. But
in a very pivotal, key moment when Brexit was going to be debated, to suddenly say, oh, you know, pretty much take September off and don't talk about it at all. That's that makes it impossible to even talk about the issue.
Yeah, it was a time that they did not have to, you know, because were they to let this clock run out, right, they would then be having to go back to the EU asking for more extensions in time, which is this is not the moment for that. And so for him to stifle that very process and the Article 52 crash out thing looming, basically, it would make it impossible for them to come up with something in the meantime.
Well, so basically, today, what they're voting for is to actually have another extension to January 31st instead of crashing out without a deal on October 31st. I could see the EU being a bit impatient with this. I know pretty much everybody else is. It seems like it's well. First of all, I think everybody can agree crashing out without a deal is not the answer. It's not smart. It's really ill advised. But is get another extension? Is that the answer? What indicates that another 3 months is going to make a difference? Because the extension from springtime until October 31st, they didn't do anything. And they're probably not going to do anything this time either. I think, really, the only smart thing to do at this point is to go back to the people and say, look, you know a lot more than you did a few years ago when you know, you voted for this thing, or at least some of you voted for this thing, and some of you maybe didn't vote at all. Now we know. Now we know what it involves to break away from the EU. We know the potential consequences. Is this still something you want to go ahead with? And you know what? If people vote yes, we still want to do this, I would accept that. I mean, I wouldn't be happy with it, but it would tell me, yeah, that's what the people want. But all these people today that are saying you can't go against the people's will, they're basically doing that on a technicality, because this was kind of a referendum that a lot of people didn't understand. It wasn't expected to go through. It did, surprised everybody, kind of like the way Trump got elected. And, you know, a lot of people regret not voting or voting the wrong way or didn't know what they were voting for. Now they do. Let's give them another chance, because that is paying attention to the will of the people. If you ask them, okay, you know, are you sure you want to do this? How come Parliament gets to vote on the same breaking out of the EU without a deal four times, the same thing, four different times? Why not respect the will the first time and never vote on it again? They keep going back. They keep saying, yeah, we're gonna crash out without a deal. People have already rejected that, so that should not even be an option. So if you can keep going back to that, you should be able to ask the people a second time, you sure you want to break away from the EU? Maybe let some saner heads prevail.
Yeah, it does seem like worth double checking, since it is such a monumental sort of organizational change, right? It would have such wide-reaching effects in so many different parts of life that, yeah, I mean, the very voters that have been cited so much in this struggle in the House of Commons very much ought to voice themselves again and perhaps see what kind of margins this wins or loses by, as like a just a double check. As you've said, you've anecdotally said it a lot, you know, given like with computers where you get the are you sure alert, you know.
Yeah, go to your computer and type DEL **, you know, delete all files. Usually it says, are you sure, yes or no? Because it's a big deal. And if your computer is that conscientious to ask you that, I think your government should be as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a good analogy, or great characterization of this kind of moment where there is still some confusion and people are not clear on what impact it may have on them specifically.
On a Unix system, though, you don't get that. If you type rm-rf star, you just delete everything. Subdirectories, the whole, no confirmation whatsoever, because it's assumed that you know what you're doing. But, you know, I think people, the population, general population, I don't think they're running Unix. I think they're running Windows or you know, something even more simplistic than that. They're not computer experts, you know. They don't type in lowercase. So they get a little bit of hand-holding, and I think you need that.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. So we'll see. This is ongoing, and it's really interesting, the timeliness, right, that it's the same sort of populist moment, but different impacts, different choices, different alliances. And this does change, really does change the global alliances and the sort of these old institutions and things like NATO and the sort of the dynamics of world powers. And it's very the proximity is kind of astounding, and I think it's just people haven't considered how fragile some of these things are if you're not as thoughtful, or you know, if you think something will always be the way it is. Mm-hmm. They very much depend on having done things a certain way and traditions of various sorts, but also certain norms, and a lot of the upending is I think gives people a little bit of disillusionment with the process, but you have to stay on it. And I think that these things like backstops and, you know, the Northern Ireland situation there, backstops and different parts of trade, I mean, those things are, when they keep coming back, I think people are realizing, okay, yeah, this is an impactful decision that you know, we must be certain, you know, we must be really determined to accept those impacts, right? Because at the end of the day, it's sovereignty. It's about being sort of on your own versus part of this incredible union. And I mean, the EU has its flaws, but I mean, it's pretty cool the way it's emerged and what it has been. I mean, we talk about it all the time, just the ability to travel in the Schengen zone and all of that.
Did you ever travel before the EU existed in Europe?
I was very, 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 very little. I mean, what year was that established in entirety?
Right around the turn of the century, but you know, I know as a kid you traveled, but you didn't go from country to country.
I had probably been to a little bit of like France and the UK prior to that, but not much as far as wandering around.
Well, let me say that when you travel from country to country, every country, if you're on a train. Train stops, passport controls, leaving and entering, stamping your passport, currency exchange. You have to change money in every single country: France, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany. Every single one had different currency, and you know the UK kept its currency. They kept the pound. They still have that. There are exceptions. There are certain things you can hold on to if you so choose. And I know the UK was not thrilled with some aspects of the EU, and every country has its gripes, but there were so many good things that came out of it: trade agreements, ease of travel, residency, all sorts of positive things. Plus, you're part of the organization, so you have the ability to voice your concerns and to make changes rather than just give up and walk away. Imagine if we all did that. That's really, you know, not the solution. So you know, I really hope cooler heads prevail, because unions they can be a good thing. They can be bad, too. But I think in the case of the EU, where you have countries that historically have been warring against each other and doing all kinds of bad things, kind of like what we're starting to see again now, this is a good thing to have a uniting force. And it might not be perfect. It might need a lot of work. But that's all the reason to stick with it and keep making it better.
Yeah, and these are unique in the sense of it's not the same as the United States is in any way. I mean, the African Union is similar in that it's, you know, many nations that then are coordinating and acting in unison. I guess OPEC is kind of like that too, but that's a completely different alliance for energy in the Mideast. But these are nations, not states. And, you know, we act as a union here in the United States as a collection of sovereign states that act as a nation. But the EU as a collection of nations and as I mentioned, the African Union, they're unique in that capacity. And it's, I think, shortchanging the power and sort of the strength of it. And it's unfortunate that the UK, as a member of the EU, doesn't see their own strength mm-hmm. As a part of that very large union, that collection of nations, they don't see that as like a net benefit as far as access to markets or what, you know, whatever it is.
Here's the irony of the whole thing. This very well could cause a mini Brexit within the UK. You'd have to call it something else, obviously, but because of the effects of Brexit, Scotland may very well have another referendum and leave the UK. So as a result of this, England could find itself pretty much stuck with Wales, maybe, and nothing else, because, you know, Ireland is also going to be a big mess. What are you going to have a hard border now between Northern Ireland and the Republic? That's not going to work. That didn't work before. It's going to cause another civil war. Do you really want that? But if you don't have that, then you have to have some kind of border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. And that's going to mess things up for them. So this whole thing is threatening the structure of the United Kingdom, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's that served its time, and these countries should go on and be independent. I don't know. But have these issues been thought through? Have they really been considered in the whole process? When you're doing something, when you're let's use the divorce analogy, okay? You've been with somebody for, 15 years? 20 years, and you say, okay, you know what? It's not working. It's not working out. So you start talking about, you might have a couple of, fights and things like that, but then you have the discussions and say, okay, you know, I get the China, you get the car, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have just one conversation unless you really hate each other. You keep going back and you keep having conversations and you keep asking, well, what's your feedback? How do you feel? And that's not happening here. It's basically, one snap election, one vote, and that's it. We're never going to go back to the people. We're never going to ask them what they think anymore. And it's just done without any kind of actual conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's true. You really should maintain and follow that process along in sort of a thorough an active way, not just sort of accept and keep pointing to these results and then go back to them solely as though the populace themselves have this sort of fixed opinion of the whole thing. I mean, mm-hmm. Of course, people's opinions are changing indefinitely as a result of the action or inaction of Parliament.
Hey, if you're in the UK and you want to call us, we'll take a phone call from the UK, but only the UK, on our system here, +1-631-632-9872. And if you're not in the UK and you want to call us, we'll take your call a little bit later on. But that's a one-time offer for people in the UK. I know sometimes we have listeners over there, and if you're just dying to say something about this subject, you should have the ability to do that. And I just wonder if people have been able to voice their opinions and be represented as much as they really should. It's an important thing. It really is. And don't think for a second that Trump's not involved in this. He's basically in the background telling Boris Johnson there's going to be a special trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. You don't need the EU. Basically trying to break the whole thing up and make it even worse. It's really ugly, and it's bound to get worse if cooler heads don't prevail. I'm a little worried, though, about the election because, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is not the most likable person in the world. I'm not a big fan of his. I think he could have done so much more to keep it from getting this bad from the beginning. He's basically somebody who's widely seen as not going to win the election if it's called for October 14th. And I'm not really clear as to what happens at that point if Boris Johnson winds up with a stronger voice as a result of calling an election because there's not a really popular Labour leader running against him. So it could work against them. I'm not really sure. I don't know enough about the intricacies of their political system to know how it's going to work out. I just wish there was a more popular leader at the moment to run against him who might actually win.
To run against Corbyn?
No, to run against Johnson.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Because Corbyn, I don't know, there's something about it. He never smiles.
He's like a British.
He just seems always cranky, you know?
He's like a British Harry Reid.
Yeah, I guess that's a good analogy.
I don't know. Just not as inspiring as he could be.
So I don't think we have any UK listeners. The phone line's not lying. And thank you, US listeners, for not not betraying our trust and calling in pretending to be from the UK, because I know you could have done that, could have gotten away with it, but you know, who would be served by that?
If you are a British student on campus,
all right, you know,
you can call 29872.
You're reaching.
Sorry.
I don't think I've ever seen a British student on this campus. I mean, they fade in, you know, they mix in, they imitate American accents. It's,
no comment.
Yeah.
I'm not commenting on the student population.
No, although the student population is here now.
None of my business.
Taking up all the parking spaces. And
no judgment.
No.
They're here, though.
They are. They are. So that's what happened today, is more movement or non-movement on Brexit in the UK. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting couple of months ahead of us, and who knows how much time after that.
What else? Yeah. I mean, just real chaos. Real chaos. And so, yeah, anything... anything else people have noticed about it, please share. We'd love to follow along. Any details or anecdotes specific to, you know, something that maybe the news and others have not considered, we'd love to hear about those perspectives. So, yeah, please write otw@2600.com.
And the news in this country, I don't think, really covers it all that much. We've been watching BBC World and Euronews and outlets like that. Of course, on the web, you can pretty much see anything you want. But it's fascinating to watch, to see democracy in action, and to see what might be the end of a country, the end of a system, the end of a union. Who knows? We have a hurricane. There's a hurricane down south that's been kind of hanging out near Florida and destroying the Bahamas over the last few days. Might come up here by the end of the week.
With any luck, yeah, absolutely. I hope it, yeah, the sooner the better.
You hope it comes to here?
Yeah, we're talking about wiping out democracy in the U.K.,
how is a hurricane here going to wipe out democracy in the UK, and why do we want to wipe out democracy in the UK?
I thought we were still talking about Brexit. I'm sorry. Yeah, Dorian. Dorian on the U.S. East Coast really hit the Bahamas hard, apparently. And, yeah, with any luck, we'll see some kind of storm activity. I hear there are other storms, too. Dorian's not the only one.
There is another one that formed. I'm not sure it's been officially named yet. But, you know, before we do that, we have a caller. Caller, are you in the UK?
No, not even close.
Not
I'm
even
on the
close.
Island.
You're on the island. But,
Long Island.
Okay, all right. You know what? We'll let you get away with it, even though we were pretty clear that we want people from the UK. Have you ever been to the UK?
Transit in the airport once.
All right, all right. So you've heard of the UK. Oh, you know what? That's good enough. What's on your mind?
Well, doesn't relate directly, but just a book recommendation. You heard about this? It's called title is New Dark Age.
I've heard of New Dark Ages, but I don't know that specific.
No, well, the title is New Dark Age. It's about technology and internet. You know, persistent surveillance, AI, you know, all the new things that are happening on the internet these days, especially like the fake news, the Russia influence, stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, facial recognition, like these days, you know, it's all about the new technologies that's happening and everything.
Sure, like, sure. What about it jumped out in relation to what we're talking about?
Well, I was just thinking it'd be a good read for any audience, anybody in the audience out there that's interested in technology, you know.
Okay.
It's very relevant to these times, and it's by an author who's from England, so that's...
Oh, there's the tie-in. Okay. See, I knew we'd get there.
Yeah, James Bridle, I think. He's a UK author, English, and...
Would you say so it helps make sense of some of the chaos and maybe explain a bit of how it may be less disorganized than it appears?
Well, the book itself is pretty short. It's about 200 pages.
Okay.
And it has a ton of references and citations. So if you want to go in and read further, it's a lot of resources it points to. But yeah, it doesn't give like a prescriptive, like solutions to the problem. It mainly sort of gives like what the recent developments are, as far as what technology has not accomplished, but like led us to.
Yeah,
at this point in time.
Sort of saying what things are shaping up to be given,
right.
Given this sort of current state of the art, and I can also imagine there is a bit of tie-in given the political upheaval that a lot of the impact these things produces, you know, that these things can have on society. So that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for the recommendation. That's interesting.
New Dark Age. It's pretty good and it's pretty short. So if anybody out there, I'd recommend it. If you're interested in technology and stuff like that.
Well, our listeners hopefully will go out and start reading books. And thank you for your phone call.
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Right. Take care. That's just an example of how USB listeners can help enrich our lives, endorsing books and other things. And it's where are you going, Kyle?
No, I'm rolling this in. I'm getting ready for the next segment.
Oh my God! How many chairs?
No, I gotta get it up
it,
here.
On put the, it next to the wall with but, all the others.
No, the screen. I gotta pull the screen down.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Hey, it's film time. Yes, it's that time of the show where Kyle and I go over the films that we have seen, film or films we've seen over the past week. We are going through every single Academy Award-winning film ever since the Academy Awards began, foreign and domestic, and we are up to 1955. What do you think, Kyle? This which one do you want to tackle first?
You want butter? You what?
No, we don't eat in the studio.
Popcorn.
We already did that. Domestic or foreign? Which one do you want to tackle first? We saw two films.
Foreign.
Okay, foreign. Another Japanese film. One in 1955. And guess what? It's another damn samurai film. Mm. All three films we've seen from Japan are samurai films. It's kind of typecast, but, you know, it's doing it to themselves. Actually came out in 1954. It was in color. It's called Samurai One Musashi Miyamoto. And it's the first part of a trilogy. I don't know if the other two parts won the Academy Award. If they did not win, we will not see them. But this one did. It actually came out in 1954, but won the 1955 Academy Award for Best Foreign Film. And it tells the story of, samurai battles and going with swords and fighting people and things like that. It's a little confusing. It's basically about these two friends who go off to battle, because that's what you do, and they don't do so well in the battles, and they wind up basically breaking into a house or pounding on the door of a house occupied by two women, a mother and a daughter.
It's like that constitutional... What is it? One of the amendments where you're not supposed to quarter soldiers and stuff? It's like that, but they don't get protection from that. The soldiers actually go and take over somebody's house.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's a lot different because, first of all, they don't have the Constitution over there. And second of all, I'm not sure what side they're on, if they're on the same side of... I don't know what they were fighting for, to be honest. It seems like everybody's just fighting everybody for one thing or another.
There's a lot of fighting for honor,
it's
I know
Japan,
that.
Japan, too. It's small. It's not that much space.
Yeah.
So work it out, people. So they go up there, they have a battle with somebody, they lose the battle, they wind up in this house. Now, one of these guys has a fiance back home who's waiting for him, and the other guy is just kind of the James Dean guy who just is a rebel without a cause, or maybe he does have a cause. I didn't really pay much attention to that. But he basically is hit upon by the mother. He rejects her advances. Then she starts spreading stories about him to badmouth him to everybody else. And the three remaining people, the other guy and the mother and the daughter, all take off someplace. So when the guy who rejected the mother's advances comes back, he finds an empty house. I wish I had their names handy. But the guy with the fiance basically winds up marrying the mother, because he really isn't a very good guy and apparently doesn't care that much about his fiance. The other guy, though, he winds up going all the way back home. For some reason, he's treated as a criminal when he gets home. I wasn't clear about that. He has some trouble at the border. there's a border, and basically he kills a bunch of people at the border. I guess that's probably why they treated him like a criminal. And then he spends the whole rest of the film basically fighting other people back home, and trying to get word to the fiance that that her husband, never to be, is still alive and not dead, but just a jerk that married somebody else. And that's kind of where it ends, really. I mean, did I leave anything out?
Not that I can recall.
I mean, I could read the synopsis here with all the names and things like that, but you won't really get much more clarity than that. I will say, though, that a lot of these characters come back in the next two films, so maybe there's some satisfaction of some of the stories there. But honestly, I found myself asking, okay, why? Why are people doing all this? Why are they running around having all these fights? And, you know, a simple conversation could clear up a lot of these issues that they're having. But it was interesting. It was well filmed. It was in color. And, you know, another Japanese samurai film. You can never have too many of those.
The character development wasn't that strong. I mean, I just was getting a little confused in the relationships between different characters and... It some of the scenes just lingered and dragged on.
The mother looked as young as the daughter, too. That made it very confusing. I didn't even know she was her mother until the film was halfway over.
I didn't know until you just said it.
See?
Stuff like that. It just, it was, you know, entertaining, but it just, it barely held my attention.
Please, no more samurai films, Academy Award. You know, we get the idea.
Well, we know there's more to Japan.
Yes, there really is. Of course, we're speaking to people back in 1955, so hopefully they've made other films that won as well. I know the next foreign film that won is not Japanese, so there's that. So we'll get to that hopefully next week. But then there's Marty. Yes, Marty was the American film that won. It was basically...
About a 34-year-old.
Yeah, a 34-year-old who looked like he was 60.
Yeah.
played by Ernest Borgnine. Borgnine? How do you say Ernest Borgnine? I don't think I ever said his name out loud. Ernest Borgnine.
Baloney.
Yeah, he was in From Here to Eternity, which we saw a couple of weeks ago from a couple of years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he played a really nasty army guy who tortured people and killed them. But here he plays a really sweet bachelor who's, you know, basically just looking for the perfect woman like people did back then. And all his friends are getting married, and he has a ton of brothers and sisters, all of them getting married. People, he's a butcher, and people come up to him in the butcher shop, old ladies saying, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You're not married." The way people spoke to each other back then, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, there's all these social expectations, and he's caught up in this, living his life, you know, just... having taken the opportunities he had, and you know, he's contemplating a business venture. I guess the shop owner that he's worked for so long wants to sell the shop to him.
Yeah,
stuff like that. And here he is, just trying to get on his feet, so to speak. You know, as those kinds of opportunities present, and these people just can't help but notice he's not attached and you know, participating in the rituals that society expects him to participate in. And so navigating that and navigating dating are all the kinds of topics that come up in various scenes.
It takes place in New York City, mid-50s, the Bronx, Italian-American families. They really do a number portraying the Italian mothers as two of them, as real busybodies and guilt trip specialists and things like that. Great portrayals, really some funny scenes. He winds up meeting a girl who was basically on a date with somebody who didn't want to be on a date with her because she was, as they said many times in the film, a dog. Yeah, that's how people were referred to back then. And she wasn't unattractive at all, but you know, in the eyes of people who care about you know, image so much, yeah, you can put people down and call them things like that. And she actually accepted that phraseology. This guy was promised a blind date, and he was disappointed, so he tried to pawn her off on somebody else, and that didn't work out. So basically, Ernest Borgnine wound up actually talking to her, spending the entire night just talking, going to various places, having a great time. and just having an honest relationship with somebody. And everybody turned against him, saying, "What are you doing this for? She's no good for you. You know, she's ugly." And it was really kind of sad to see how he was almost pushed away from somebody that he truly liked.
But as his genuine, his sort of authenticity and like genuine nature sort of continues to show through as these norms and different social contexts push him,
mm-hmm.
and he just resists ever more. No, that, you know, I'm this type of person, and then feels his empathy really shows through. He like feels for this girl that's or woman, that young woman that's being.
Oh, they called them girls back then.
Well, that was the whole
whole
issue as well.
It's terrible. The dogs, language. Girls, all.
Well, and the way the guys are treating dating. I mean, he's like paying a guy $5 to take a girl home. I mean, this is like borderline pickup artist stuff.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot there, a lot to digest.
Great, though. Great to watch.
She was played by Betsy Blair. But you know what? Originally, the role was supposed to go to Nancy Marchand. I don't know if you know who that is, but she played the mother on The Sopranos.
Oh, okay.
And she was also in Lou Grant. That's a little bit of trivia there if people watch that show.
And I don't think we mentioned it, but it's worth saying this is a black and white film.
Mm-hmm.
The international film was color.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of the American films are remaining black and white for artistic reasons, I believe.
And they just had a lot of that film stock. And if you're going to do a production, you're going to weigh that stuff. Are you mm-hmm. going to spend the money? Are you going to blow the budget on this new color process? Or are you just going to tell the story and spend the money doing location and lighting and costumes?
And the other thing about this film was it was considered an art house film. It was kind of low budget. The cast was a bunch of unknowns. The entire budget for the film, $350,000, took in $2 million.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe
that's right. Incredible.
It did really, really well, and was kind of a green light to make more low-key type films and not just blockbusters all the time. Also, it was based on a teleplay, a television movie that was aired 2 years earlier. In fact, some of the same characters reprised their roles in the movie. Not the main characters, but some of the supporting actors and actresses. So that's a first. That hadn't happened before. But overall, you know, a fairly short film, about 90 minutes. I think it's the shortest Academy Award winning film ever. But it kept going. It was entertaining. A lot of New York scenes. And
oh, yeah. I mean, this, I think, is the beginning, in my opinion, of New York as a location destination, right? I mean, just the familiar spots, being able to see streets that are, to this day, you know, probably very similar to at least structurally the way they're portrayed in this film in an archival way.
The Third Avenue L, though, that's not there
just,
anymore.
Well, true stuff. I like wouldn't know those kinds of details, but you know, a New Yorker that maybe lived around the neighborhood then might notice that and mm-hmm. would be able to talk all about how those things have changed. But vehicles, transportation, that stuff, I mean, it is so much different when you have to kind of accept certain realities of a location shot like that, and the sort of the chaos, you know, pigeons, whatever stuff is there, you have to kind of roll with.
Pigeons? But,
well, no, I'm saying like real life stuff in doing something on location versus a soundstage,
yes.
where, you know, it's in Hollywood on a back lot and it's made to look like something, but it's all plywood and paint.
Honestly, I don't know how much of it. I mean, some of it it probably was in Hollywood, but the external scenes were New York, which was great.
Right, and I think it's one of the first films we really see. I mean, there were other films. I think we saw, what did we see? Chicago, the movie about the drunk guy. Is that Chicago or is that New York?
I think that was New York too.
Was it New York?
Yeah.
Okay. So these types of films, just using the city as a backdrop, combining both location stuff on sound stages for interiors and stuff, and then doing live, like real shots of cities outdoors. I think that just really well encapsulates it. Just it makes the development of the scene, it sets the scene so much more quickly and makes whatever else they're telling in this story that much more, I think, relatable, authentic, I don't know, real. There's something about how they're getting better at that as we get into 50s, 60s. It's really noticeable and makes the stories really natural and compelling.
So that is our look at 1955, the films that won. It's actually the 1956 Academy Awards, but the films came out in 1955. And as you can see, the foreign film came out in 1954. So the years don't really matter that much, but we're going through it slowly but surely. And next week, hopefully, we'll have something about 1956. So that's it for the look at film for this week.
Push this out.
Yeah, get the chair. Sir, are you bringing more of them in?
The projectors, the wheel's stuck on the wire.
Right. Well, just so little space in here. More things going on in the world, and we have extra time. I understand Finn's on the ground, so that's good.
Okay. He landed?
I think so.
Okay,
that's what
good.
I'm hearing.
Good.
It's a rocky landing from what I understand.
He was out there for a couple hours.
Yeah, well, it's a good day for it, you know?
It's a long time.
I'd like to be
really
soaring
nice.
In the clouds. That's what it's all about.
I like the kind of mid-70s
if you
weather.
Can't soar in the clouds in Long Island, what's the point of even living here?
Yeah, he knows how to live, too, that Finn.
Okay, so we've talked about this before, the Department of Motor Vehicles here in New York, and how undocumented people can get licenses, and we've talked about why that's a good thing, because basically you want people who know how to drive on the road. Doesn't matter where they're from or what their situation is right now. If they're going to be driving, they should be accountable for their actions. They should be able to pass certain tests. And it's really got nothing to do with their immigration status, as so many things don't. Credit card purchases, let people buy things, even if they're undocumented. Let people do all kinds of things if they're undocumented, and deal with the undocumented issues in the proper forum. It's got nothing to do with this. Anyway, of course, you can't just have something that makes sense without people raising all kinds of a ruckus about it. Here's the story that we saw today. A state worker could not be fired for refusing to process a driver's license application submitted by a person in the country illegally under a bill unveiled today by two Long Island state legislators. Yeah. The proposal...
This reminds me of that woman, the clerk in the South, who was refusing marriage licenses. Remember that?
For gay people.
Right. I can't remember what state. Anyway.
It's one of those states.
Similar.
My view on this is, why is that your job then? If you have such a problem with gay people, then maybe you shouldn't be making wedding cakes, period. If you have such a problem with who is getting a license, maybe you shouldn't be the person giving out licenses. You know, if you pay the fee and you pass the test, you get a damn license and you have an address. You know, this is not saying that being in the country without documentation isn't an issue. It's just not an issue for you. You know, it's not something that you need to get involved in. Just do your damn job.
If anyway. These people only knew how I felt and what my religion drove me to,
exactly.
You know, in light of their,
you wouldn't get anything.
Their perspective,
you wouldn't get a bagel. They would not. They would refuse to serve. If they knew what was in your mind, the things you believed in, the things that you were endorsing in your head, right there in that moment, nobody would give you anything.
Well, yeah, that, and I was just talking also about the things I believe preventing me from acknowledging. Their stupidity and the ways they're behaving. You know, there are so many things about their lifestyle that offend me. But if I was paralyzed in a similar way and you know, refused to interact with people because of their crucifixes, you know, because I'm offended whenever I see a cross on someone's neck or whatever, you know, whatever symbol or activity or perspective, if those sensitivities were aired, you know, I don't think I'd get through a day.
Well, that's the thing, though. You don't get involved. You don't get involved in other people's personal beliefs. So, you know, you might have a fundamental disagreement. You might find something disheartening or dismaying or disgusting or another word beginning with dis. But you let it go.
I think white tube socks are an abomination.
They are.
That's blasphemy.
They
if
are.
You
That's
wear white
I,
tube
I
socks.
Don't look down
yeah.
ever.
Anyone. If you are wearing white tube socks right now,
I don't want to see that. Nobody
insult my faith.
Yeah, Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think many people would disagree
with
that.
It's an abortion of fashion.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a way of phrasing it. You know, usually we have to leave it by this time. Isn't this cool? We can keep talking. You know, we're still here.
That is
still here.
Cool.
We're going strong.
That's right.
Hey, we run out of time because we have so much to talk. And hey, we're going to keep talking.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Haven't even taken phone calls yet. Oh,
I'm
my God.
Crack my knuckles.
And you know what? We get a whole different audience at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, we got to stretch.
It's a shift change out there. Basically, people are listening and then they all turn off the radio and new people come and turn on the radio.
You know, you should let people know that this is 90.1. WSB Stony Brook.
Why?
Because it's nearly 7 o'clock.
You're supposed to do legal ID on the hour. You did it at 6:58. That's
a violation?
No, it's not at all. yeah. Anyway, let me continue with the story.
Yes,
and then we'll take some phone calls, maybe. So this proposal is the latest political skirmish as New York nears the effective date for the new law that permits those in the country illegally to obtain driver's licenses. Again, I don't see what the issue is. Under the bill, the state wouldn't be able to fire a Department of Motor Vehicles employee who refused to process an application. The employee also would be able to hire an attorney to defend himself if the state tries to take any civil action against the worker. Predictably, it's sponsored by Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan and Assemblyman Anthony Palumbo, two Republicans. Flanagan says it's meant to protect employees in the awful predicament of choosing between whether to abide by federal law or to issue a state license to an illegal immigrant. Oh, boo-hoo. Really awful predicament of having to give a license to somebody who you don't approve of? Get real. Grow up already. For God's sake, do your damn job. I can't believe
forget
I said
that
twice. But
forget that, though. No, 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 no.
This really is upsetting, man.
You should just
rip up the story.
Stop at federal law. It's not even about what the law is. Forget that. Uh-huh. Who cares whether you personally think it's an awful predicament or not? It's federal law.
No, it's not federal law. State law. That's the thing. He's saying, let's use federal law and, allow us to discriminate.
Same difference.
Remember, the feds are not, no longer the good guys.
Okay, but same difference. If it's a state policy and it's a license is a state-issued document, you should follow guidance for your state and not abdicate or not take the orders or take the policy directives just bypassing the state's opinion. And in general, you should follow state statute after the federal law, right?
WUSB Stony Brook. This is people are in an awful predicament because they don't agree that these people are human and deserve anything. And to tell them that they have to give them a license after they pass the test and pay the fee and follow all the rules and regulations and fulfill all the requirements because they're in the country in a way that these people don't approve of, they face this awful predicament where they can't sleep at night because they gave somebody a license as opposed to letting them continue to drive without a license. I mean, God almighty, the thinking or non-thinking involved here. Palumbo, in a statement, added the legislation is necessary to protect our everyday workers on the front lines from the dangerous policies the governor and the progressive Democrats have recently embraced. Dangerous.
What about a gun license?
Oh, let's not get guns involved in this, please. The proposal is more aspirational than likely, with Democrats controlling both the Senate and Assembly. The Flanagan-Palumbo proposal has almost no chance of becoming law, so there. I feel better. But still, this stupidity just really annoys me sometimes. This hatred, you know, the way people are treated. For God's sake, what happened to our compassion? What happened to us welcoming people and helping people and not treating them like they're all criminals and they have to be basically disinfected, gotten rid of, like there's some kind of infestation. You know, you treat people like that and you take away their humanity. That is not what we're about. These are issues that should be discussed, absolutely. They should be addressed, but you can do that without dehumanizing people. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I'm just, just a cog in the wheel here at WUSB.
Stony Brook. That's our third legal ID. We're pretty legal now for a while. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Finn is going to be here at 7:30. He's not here now. So you're stuck with us here at Off the Wall. We're on from 6 to 7 normally. But today, we're on from 6 to 7:30. And you have the opportunity to call us and speak your mind on any topic from anywhere. You don't have to be from the UK anymore. That requirement has expired. You just simply have to dial 631-632-9872, and we'll put you on the air, and you can have your say. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we want to know what you think about that, literally. So, I mean, take this opportunity. We're offering you a community radio station and delightful, intelligent, stimulating conversation on all manner of issues, whether it involves ID.
Don't be shy. Don't be shy, people. Come on. It's it doesn't hurt.
For immigrants, immigrant ID, maybe.
Yeah, if you're undocumented, don't call us because you're not human.
Immigration policy reform.
We don't want to hear. I mean, God, I can't even fathom what it's like to be like this. But there are so many examples of it out there. Just the hatred.
Do people coming, immigrants from the border, detained at the border, all of that, do they come with ID? I mean, they have passports from Guatemala. It's not that they are not citizens of a country. They're immigrants. They're just not citizens of our country.
Right,
it's not that they're undocumented at all. Clearly, Guatemala.
And they're not illegal either.
Wherever they come from would be able to issue them a passport.
We have a call. I suspect this call is from a cell phone. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
That's
definitely a cell phone, right?
Yes, and you're listening to W297BM 107.3.
Wow, you know our translator station. How about that?
At the Three Village area and the campus.
That's right. That's right. If you can't get 90.1, you can always tune to 107.3.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping us legal.
Very legal. So let me ask you, it's better that people don't have driver's licenses and have not been tested to operate vehicles driving around, regardless of their status. We can just let them drive and have accidents and kill people and not have insurance and all that kind of stuff because they can't get a license.
Yeah, if you make it impossible, if you make it impossible for people to do something legally, they're not just going to stop doing things. They have to get to work. They have to drive their kids around. They have to do things. Let's, make it so that people can at least be involved in society and deal with the immigration issues through the immigration departments and not become policemen ourselves on everything.
Yep. And where was all the enforcement when the pilgrims got here?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm sure the Native Americans wish there was an ICE back then.
Ooh. Well, anyway, great conversation. Enjoying the show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the points I brought up. I didn't mean to bring in guns to this because we're talking about driver's license, not gun licenses. Mm-hmm. But it's the same effect in that, it's good to have training, to have some level of credentialing, to have some bar, and whatever regimen, whatever you're designing. And in this case, yeah, they're going to participate in one way or another. We should be able to count them like every other human in the census, without discriminating in that way. People are here. They will need resources and they'll need to have ground transport. You're just making it monumentally harder for people to live as immigrants, I think, does not necessarily do much for our immigration system.
Yeah, and undocumented people are not just benefiting. They are contributing as well. They are trying to earn their citizenship. They're doing jobs that other people won't do. They're fulfilling needs. They're doing all sorts of things. So undocumentation is something, it's a misnomer. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. In many ways, it's a stepping stone to full citizenship, people with green cards, et cetera. And, you know, if you treat people like criminals, though, then they are going to have to act like criminals because they can't basically function in any other way.
Yeah, you can begin to institute things that paralyze their ability to interact, whatever their status is. And I think a lot of this kind of legislation is a reactionary thing. It's misplaced angst and anger over economic and other conditions, I think. But it really... It really is about dismantling and disrupting the ability, the immigration system in and of itself, like in under the guise of sort of so-called reforms or so-called more stringent policies or readings of policies. But what it does is destroys the immigration system as it is, mm-hmm. and you know, functionally making it impossible to navigate or as uncomfortable to navigate as possible. That really I think is disingenuous, and especially that these are under the guise of reforms, and that's, you know, ostensibly what the Republicans would want Democrats to quote come to the table over is, yeah, let's discuss immigration reform. Or they're constantly blaming, mm-hmm. why has immigration reform not been addressed in previous Congresses and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, I mean, what it really is about is how many different ways can we disrupt and make it impossible to be an immigrant in this country. Well, and that is just The most disgusting aspect of it.
I think you nailed it there, because ALC posted something today on Twitter, which I thought was pretty interesting, concerning people who aren't opposed to immigration, but just opposed to illegal immigration. And so many people say that. But then the question you ask them is, well, then why do we make it so hard for people to immigrate legally? And I realize, you know, when you have this conversation with people who say they're opposed to illegal immigration, and you start that conversation about, okay, how can we make it easier for people to immigrate legally from various countries? Within a couple of sentences, you will get to the point where they don't want people from certain countries here. They don't want people of certain nationalities, certain races, certain religions. And you get to the racism pretty damn quickly. So it's not just about illegal immigration. It's about immigration, period. And Trump will back this up with his recent moves to strip citizenship of children of American citizens who immigrated to this country.
Now soldiers, I think?
Yeah, if you're in the military and you give birth to a kid in a different country, your kid is not a citizen anymore, or at least under his fantasy world. And all kinds of other... ways that people who have immigrated legally are being targeted. For instance, if you immigrate legally to this country and you're on public assistance, you could lose your status because of that. So you're not really a citizen, even though you're a legal citizen. You see how it works? It's a stepping stone. So it's not just about the quote-unquote illegal immigrants. It's about anybody from a particular area that is not considered preferred. Somebody even said that immigration is considered to be for Europeans. Somebody high up said that. I forget who it was. But it's disgusting. Disgusting the roads that we're going down, and it does not represent who we are.
Yeah, I think the recent thing that you're discussing, that you talked about, was the public charge clarification, or the reading, is this person a public charge? Or I think that's the phrasing, yeah, but it basically means is, will they be using public services in a way that they're, I guess, somewhat of a burden or otherwise.
Well, how many of us do the same thing? You know, how many people who are in this country for generations are a burden? We don't talk about ourselves that way. We try to help people not be a burden. We try to, you know, put them on their feet and give them a future, not look at them as something bad.
Well, also the calculation is that they will, were they to emigrate to our country, I'm getting confused with the terms, but were they to be a benefit, they would then be able to participate and contribute in a way that actually pays that back to society, instead of being whatever that cost is initially at the border, or to get them to a point where they can work and participate and, you know, have a family or otherwise be a functional member and be, you know, well on their path towards that citizenship or whatever it is, building that life. That they ultimately are not a cost, but rather, like implicated, the greater benefit, really, and by bringing those cultural stories and lifestyles and religion and you name it, culture, it ends up contributing and making us a more interesting place as well.
You're listening to an extended version of Off the Wall here on WUSB. Finn will be here at 7:30. He's looking for a parking space now, I understand, and he should be here momentarily. You can call us, though, 631-632-9872 if you have opinions. I know we had a bunch of calls there that we couldn't get to because we were talking to somebody else. But we have open phone lines now, 631-632-WUSB. Where are you going, Kyle? You can't leave. Come back here. Everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Bring more chairs in?
No.
Good, good. No. Here's a story. When an engaged couple decided to have their wedding at Boone's Camp Event Hall in Booneville, Mississippi, there's just so much there that's a warning sign to me. I don't know. Something about the sound of Booneville, Mississippi, Boone's Camp Event Hall just doesn't seem like it would be open to a lot of progressive type things. They contacted the venue's owner and started making arrangements. After about a week, the sister of the groom says the owner got back to the couple with shocking news. They could no longer have their wedding there. Why? According to the bride, the sister of the groom, it's because her brother is black and her fiancé is white, and mixed-race marriages go against the venue owner's religious beliefs. Surprised? Oh, it's not just about gay people. No, it's about everything. It's about religion. It's about race.
What religion is that again?
It's race, Kyle. Black and white.
What religion doesn't allow that?
Well, there's all kinds
In any sense.
Yeah.
In reality.
No, you have a good point.
What religion, please?
Yeah.
I'd love to know.
They had that conversation. Basically, there's a video of this, actually, because apparently this was being recorded. First of all, we don't do gay weddings or mixed race because of our Christian race. I mean, our Christian belief, the unnamed woman said in the video. To which the reply, as you would say, Kyle, is, okay, we're Christians as well, so what in the Bible tells you that? Well, I don't want to argue my faith, the woman says. We just don't participate. And the video clip was posted and quickly went viral. So, yeah, that is what you get. That is what you get when you say things like, yeah, it's perfectly okay for people to just act on their religious beliefs and refuse service to anybody. You get the racism. You get all kinds of hatred that bobs its head pretty quickly.
Well, when you don't question that, people can say anything is their belief. And I'm sorry, but I you know, one faith over another does not supersede and get some sort of special treatment. So, yeah, you know, we are going to ask for some details about exactly what passage and what faith and, frankly, what pastor. Let's speak to your religious leader. And I'd like to hear exactly their perspective on refusing these things. And can you just add in a little flavor as to why that perspective is a loving and Christian attitude? I'd love to know more, please.
The Facebook page for Boone's Camp Event Hall has been taken down, and no website for the business could be located. But it appears, however, that an apology was posted on the Boone's Camp Event Hall Facebook page when the page was still active, and some screenshots that were posted and verified by CBS News said this. They said the initial belief about keeping races separate was something the woman learned as a child growing up in Mississippi.
Yeah, that's a Mississippi thing.
That's perfectly believable. On Saturday, my husband asked me to show him in the Bible where it was located as to the content concerning biracial relationships. I was unable to recall instances where the Bible was used, giving a verse that would support my decision. The author of the post says, after searching all weekend and consulting with her pastor, got him involved in it, she determined there is no verse in the Bible that supports this belief. There are two requirements for marriage, and race has nothing to do with either. My intent was never racism, but to stand firm on what I assumed right concerning marriage. Okay, you know, I appreciate apologies as much as anybody, and, you know, we should be somewhat forgiving, but I pretty much am 100% sure that gay marriage would not fly in that venue either.
Well, yeah, I wasn't at all surprised by that. I mean, you know, given that the commotion was over biracial marriage, that I'm sure was not on the menu of other things they allowed or you know, were really into at this venue. But it does point out that, you know, we need to... maybe question. And I mean, this exemplifies the impact religion has, that you just start saying, this is what the Bible, this is what the Torah, this is the Quran, this is what, you know, this piece of bark, you know, behind some bush that was on fire. Whatever tablet landed in your lap, whatever inscription you carved in your forehead, can tell you all kinds of things. But we need to be critical, maybe, and be curious, and maybe even question, what we're told, and maybe we were told things in the context of religion, and they weren't actually something that were, you know, religious. Just as this is pointing out,
I think that's one of the strengths of this country, is that we have those dialogues. A lot of places in the world where you don't have those dialogues, where things are just accepted, not questioned, and they're the way of the land. And here we have diversity. This is where diversity works, because we have so many different interpretations, so many different lifestyles and ways of looking at things. My question, Kyle, is how do we treat somebody like this? Because this is somebody who clearly had a way of thinking about something, has admitted that she was wrong about at least that part of it. Do we continue to condemn, or do we accept? Do we try to bring them into a different way of thinking? And do we listen? Do we try to open up a dialogue? It's, you know, I'm conflicted on this.
Well, as a person, I don't think she should be canceled. But I mean, the damage has been done as far as from a business perspective. Like, the venue probably isn't going to be able to continue as it is. You know, obviously their site and whatnot is...
It's Boonville, Mississippi. Under new management, they can open up.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
New owners.
They
exactly.
Had a Facebook page was their website. Come
right,
on.
Right. They'll just... of course. Okay. Well, apologies. Yeah, we got a new cigarette vending machine or something. But the point is... yeah, as a person, totally. It seems like she accepted this as like a learning moment, or some kind of epiphany that she had over this, and with the help, I think, of her community, and as you said, a pastor, and so on and so forth.
You're
so
not going to wipe out the racism that's inherent, not right away, but you can have some kind of back and forth and dialogue and as you say, epiphany.
I think the most you could hope for is that she evangelizes in her network,
mm-hmm.
and her community, and maybe shares what she's learned, and maybe meets some couples that she would have otherwise turned away had she not had this change in and maybe she would come to a new place and maybe be a lot more of an ally instead of someone who's just been relegated as a result of one bad choice or one bad call.
When you demonize people, it's very easy to make them into something that you have to be afraid of, that you can't actually talk to. And we see that used against us. We see that used by us. We see people in certain parts of the country being categorized in a certain way as idiots, as rednecks, which is, you know, completely wrong in so many cases. But we see the same hatred being pushed on gay people and on interracial couples and children and things like that. The dialogue is essential to overcome that. We can't just keep condemning each other and not resolving the issues. So I think when you have a confrontation like this, where somebody is basically shown to be wrong and admits that they're wrong, that's something that you should pursue and continue to have the conversation. You might not change the person entirely, but you might change them enough. And you might actually have a civil discourse back and forth where you make progress, where you're advancing a tiny bit, but somewhat. Without that, I don't see how things can change. I don't see how things actually will have different sides for the issues, and that'll keep going on. We'll have all this back and forth that doesn't really result in anything different. But I think these tiny steps, they matter. They matter. And it's good when you have the breakthroughs, when you have the communication. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being too simplistic in this, but I do think that That's one of our strengths in this country, is being able to see different ways of doing things and talking about them and reconsidering what we believe in. And we have to do that as well. We have to, you know, not be so condemning and judgmental and harsh when somebody gets something wrong. We need to be able to have the discourse and explain why we think it's wrong, and hopefully bring the person over to a different way of thinking.
And maybe just the careful, shrewd, hard-nosed businesswoman in her, she might realize that there's a market, and she could become the gay wedding venue in her area, and or, you know, biracial wedding, because others aren't taking advantage of the market, you know, for those kinds of ceremonies. You know, these opinions can change, and then she could, you know, carve out a niche in her community that was otherwise being turned away. I mean, that's the kind of possibility that you can have when people are challenged, but in a I think equally loving way, right? And we're expecting her to be loving and Christian and caring about these couples that want to have a ceremony at their venue. So why wouldn't we approach her the same way?
Yeah, I mean, we should be that way too. Christian or not, you should be accepting of other people and willing to engage them in dialogue and treat them like human beings, not like idiots, not like people that, you know, don't deserve even an acknowledgement, because that's what we're complaining about too.
Even if they come from a place with a funny name.
Exactly. Because we come from places with funny names too. I mean, Setauket, for God's sake, that's funny. Mm. Hey, we don't have much time left. In fact, we only have a couple of minutes. So if you want to call in, you got to do it now. 631-632-9872. Been talking about all kinds of things in this hour and a half, which kind of feel more comfortable. You know, I can stretch out a little bit more and not have to, you know, race to finish everything within an hour. So it's nice to have this occasionally happen. Sometimes our show is only 45 minutes.
Yeah, I'm getting a little jumpy though, because Finn does bring that cattle prod, the electric one.
He brings energy to the place, absolutely, yes. That,
people think it's lightning in the theme song, but it's actually him zapping us. He just comes right and just gives you a nice good one, right?
Okay, apparently the parking situation is worse than I thought. He's saying 7:40 now.
We have
more time than we thought. So we have another 10 minutes. We're not just, you know, stringing you along here, folks. He is coming. He's on his way.
It seems like he's attracted a flock of geese or something, or maybe the geese on campus are preventing him from landing
here. It's difficult. It's really something difficult. Like, we have a phone call, though. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, Off the Wall. It's Meredith from Bellport.
Wow.
Many, many years ago, I used to volunteer for the Stony Brook Icon. I also volunteered for Mr. Edison.
The science fiction convention. The Icon was a science fiction convention here in Stony Brook.
Okay, yes. So I've been through you guys for many a year. I just wanted to tell you thank you for putting this out there, putting this on the air. A lot of people don't seem to understand. We were never like this as a people until the idiot showed up. I was not even expecting him to, let alone run, for people to take it seriously, and then for him to be in Washington. It's getting to the point where it's unacceptable, and whatever has to be done has to be done. But the rest of us are losing focus as a people. You know, you already have mixed race couples. I mean, there's already gay and lesbian priests. So when you were talking about how the Bible was coming out, if people really looked at the Bible for what it says, not only are we not allowed to eat shrimp and lobster, you're not supposed to do anything on Sunday. Nothing. I mean, I think even you're supposed to go through the Bible and read your quotes and then recite your quotes and write them out, which is also another thing when you talked about Mississippi and the southern aspect. There are people out there that are literally doing that. I mean, and even if you go into other details of areas and religious aspects, you have the Amish. You know, so there are things that are out there that were already evident. But why everyone is trying to only take the race and hatred focus of the Bible, and let's do that, you know, whatever the hate we can put out. it has to stop. It's like it's getting too off the wall. It's getting too crazy. And you are correct when you say that immigration reform is only for certain races. And they can't do that. And it frightens me about how many people we have lost as our day workers, as our farmers, as our grape pickers, as our farming, our vining, our lettuce and tomatoes. There's just so many people that when he, and I won't say his name, when he came in, made people afraid. And there's absolutely no reason for this, because they're believing the hype, they're believing whatever he's putting out, and it was just a TV show. Now it's not a TV show anymore. Now he's writing out things in contracts. He's writing out executive orders, and most of it really is to just put down President Obama.
Yes.
And what was scary was that when, if you look back on one of those presidential dinners where Trump and the Mrs. Melania, that's not the word I want to use for her, but when they came to his dinner, you have to see his face. I mean, and that was how many years ago? And his, Trump's face, when you see it at the dinner, is you can see the vile hatred he had towards President Obama. Everybody just blew it off because they were not expecting him, you know, to make a big, huge deal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, then it went to the birth certificate, it went to this, it went to that, and now that he's in, it's disgusting. And if everyone wants to talk about how Trump is, look at how he was in the churches. And people's funerals, or McCain's funeral.
Right.
You know, that to me was a man, I mean, nervous about having him, McCain, become president. I would take him in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he raised up out of the grave right now, go.
I don't know about that, but...
I know, but you know, I'm being facetious, but it just makes you feel like
but,
that.
But here's the thing. You say, and you did say his name, Trump. It's not just him. I mean, yeah, he's the personification of it, but there are so many others. There's the Steve Millers, and there's the Pences, and all kinds of people that do his bidding. And the many, many followers who are emboldened by this, all the racism and hatred that we're seeing now, it goes well beyond one person. And no matter what happens in 2020, that's still going to be around afterwards.
Right. And it's going to take us a long while to recover from it. I kind of consider it an airborne virus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, it's what medication do we take for a stupidity virus? I don't know, thought. Intelligence, you know, read a book, have an open heart, have a sense of understanding, you know, but it just makes me crazy as to they're only singling it out to certain races. But I loved the fact that Denmark was told him it was absurd. Oh, I can't believe. Yeah, really, it is absurd. If you think about anyone with any intelligence, you to say something like, "Yeah,
he doesn't." Yeah, he doesn't accept no for an answer. But I think it's what I'm hearing also is that so much can get wrapped up in religious hyperbole, and I think a lot of the political stuff that we feel is sort of a hijacking has used a lot of the religious right and a lot of that sort of orthodox, and you can say sort of that conservative orthodoxy across any real religion, but in at least the conservative political angle, you know, wrapped up in Christianity. And I think this story that we talked about kind of sums that up, because a lot of other issues have been sort of conflated and confused with religion, or religion has been used as a vehicle to substantiate it for people that may not be in the depths of the political or hatred, but they're on the fringes and or otherwise a part of the so-called base. That I think you may have felt this way. A lot of other people may have felt this way too. But in so far as your point about him becoming a representative of this base, I mean, I have more than once felt like, well, what are these people doing in politics? They never had an interest in it before. And why are they here now when they're, you know, with this sort of populist angle on something that I would say is contradictory to a lot of Christian mores and beliefs and sort of what we would have felt as our sort of traditional course in this country. It's been, felt like a hijacking, felt like it's upended and not deserving of the attention and climate. But these are good strategies and good ways of hearing it. And anyway, I think that's what I was getting in the conversation and to your point.
Yeah. No, it's precisely because in it there's such the broader spectrum that they're trying to throw up in here, which really is only the rhetoric that he's promoted, things that he's put out there, and it's absolutely impossible to realize. And I mean, I know people that are like, "Oh yeah, thank God he's in, because we're all going to get $1 million back in our taxes." And I'm like,
"Yeah."
Do you realize what you've just said?
Yeah,
and the possibility you're actually thinking this as a reality, that scares me.
Yeah, and bringing in these people believing in a sort of a religious sense, it becomes not about questioning Trump. It's about, oh, you're questioning faith, you're questioning Christianity. Well, that's not to be questioned. If it was a comparison with his political platform, as if there was one,
right.
You know, then we'd have to actually ask those hard questions. But if you wrap it in the hyperbole, or wrap the hyperbole and that stuff in some kind of orthodoxy, or at least associate it, it becomes something that we question less than we would him as a representative.
You see, the thing is, people believe that he stands for their interests, their working class interests, the people in middle America. He's not from middle America. He's not from the working class. He doesn't respect religion. He's none of that. He's from New York. We know a phony when we see one in New York. We know this. We're not putting down people in a particular part of the country. We're telling you the truth. We're telling you something that we know, because he's one of us. He came from here, for God's sake.
Exactly.
I grew up two blocks from the guy. He keeps coming out to Long Island. We can't seem to stop it.
Seriously, we need to watch him. We need to see him eat some pizza. Okay.
Oh no.
That's Judgment Day.
Nobody
okay?
wants to see that, Kyle.
That'll be it. That'll be the end of him.
It's just the people in those parts of the country have so much more integrity than he ever will. And I think we don't say that enough.
Well, we do when we go to the South. I mean, hey, when we were in Tennessee, when we were
traveling,
we loved it there.
Mississippi. We were in Mississippi. It was great.
Absolutely.
And the interactions we've had with people there have been nothing but positive. We don't need we don't say that nearly enough as a rule, I think. And I think, you know, if we interacted more like what I was saying earlier, we wouldn't have this two-bit salesman going over and fooling people into thinking that he cares about them. He doesn't.
His leadership and his politics, it should not be the beginning of a conversation. It should not be the end of a conversation either. But it should not be how we get to know the other parts of the country and people that believe things other than what we believe, because it is a distraction. It isn't really what we are about as citizens.
And he thinks if he lies about it, then it makes it true. And if he doesn't talk about it, it makes it true. And if he omits something, then it makes it true. Or if he says, oh, we need to laugh about it, these people are ridiculous, it makes it true. It doesn't. And then if he hides his taxes or hides the fact that Trump University went and tanked itself, you know, all of those other places, I mean, the Atlantic City, it tanked itself. They were overjoyed when they literally had to take down his name from the buildings to get rid of it. He just thinks that, oh, okay, I'll say it, and that just makes it true. No, it doesn't. And then the more he tries to repeat himself, and the more anyone tries to confront him about his lies, he has a temper tantrum. And it's like, this is not the person that we want, you know, as what the POTUS, to turn around and have a temper tantrum, and then, well, I'm just going to go play golf.
Yeah.
Really?
I like that. You know, look at his previous works, his other projects, indeed, the casinos and all of them, that body of work as a whole, how have those gone? What is the logical extent of those fine works, and project that onto our current situation?
But, I mean, there's so much we can learn from all this. It doesn't all have to be bad. We've learned how propaganda works. We've learned how demonstrably false facts can suddenly be turned into something that's 100% in the other direction, and how people will believe that. If we survive this, if we get past it, and we are able to rebuild our democracy afterwards, I think we'll be stronger for it. We can look back on these days as the lesson that we learned, and we can learn how to make it a better place, a more democratic place, a fairer place, a more opening place. We'll see. I'm optimistic. I have to be, otherwise I won't stay sane. Well, thank you for your call. Finn is here, so we're gonna have to leave it there. But
Beautiful, thanks again. Right, and I agree with you, and I will definitely welcome in my friends after Trump is finished.
Okay. Well, we will hopefully see you when that happens, and hopefully we'll all be better for it.
Thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And again, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. That is our email address. Finn is coming up next. I'm sure he has quite a story to tell. We will be back again next week, same time, same station. Have a good night.
Here's a little song about a man gone wrong, building up his evil empire. Months of ifs and buts, the papers got the guts to call the man of the year a liar. To call the man of the year a liar. Hustling and bustling across the big green lawn, stomping through the famous rose garden. Every little rose turned up its pretty nose, saying you owe the earth a pardon, saying you owe the earth a pardon. And fumbling and bumbling through the halls at night, turn every light switch on. You're searching for the room where you used to be the groom, but she's packed all her jewelry and gone. Yeah, she's scooped up all her jewelry. Them all out, they'll only give me gout, and that's unbecoming for a future dictator. That's unbecoming for a future dictator. And you're gonna build a wall, the biggest wall, the beautifulest wall around our borders. But here's what I think, you better talk to a shrink, 'cause you got serious psychological disorders. You got dangerous pathological disorders. Well, that's my little song about a man gone wrong. He's nasty from his head to his feet, and when the dirt on this man finally hits the fan, and no one gives a damn about his tweets, he'll be finally and forever obsolete.